This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Becky Kelly, president of the Washington Environmental Council, and Iko Schaefer, director of Front and Centered. Both the Washington Environmental Council and Front and Centered are members of the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy, a coalition of organizations committed to building Washington's economy, improving the health of residents, and leading the fight against climate change. Becky Kelly and Iko Schaefer are here to give us an update on the Alliance's campaign for effective and equitable climate action in 2018, and to tell us about their climate initiative, which they plan to file with the state at the end of this month and present to voters in the November 2018 general election. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy, the reason you were formed, and your history?
Thanks, Diane. This is Becky, and I'll kick it off. The Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy came together at the end of a period of struggle trying to advance sound climate policy and really make progress on this existential threat that we're all facing. So I work with the environmental community and have for a long time. And, you know, as we worked on climate policies, we were able to make some gains, but we found that we just weren't getting there because this is a fundamental transformation that we're talking about in our economy and our society in terms of how we power our world. And we found that, you know, the environmental community wasn't big enough to do that on our own. And we were realizing this really needs everyone pulling together and we need to build a broader movement for change. So there was a big effort to reach out with people who cared about these issues and maybe we all weren't working together. So workers represented by labor unions, communities of color, businesses who are interested in transitioning to clean energy. And it's been about 3 years, I think, maybe since we began coming together and realizing that we'd be a lot stronger and more able to affect change if we pulled together a much bigger table. So that's the fundamental organizing principle, is that everybody's got to be in this together because this is a pretty big transformation and it has a ton of opportunity if we do it right.
And over the 2.5 years or 3 years now, we've been working really hard together to figure out and bring together everyone's solutions into one initiative. So it's been a tremendous undertaking and a lot of work all around. And you can imagine everyone who's coming to the table, they have something of interest in climate. I think we've gotten to the place that we know that climate change is not just an environmental issue, not just an environmentalist issue. For me, I work with communities of color across Washington State. These are leaders and individuals who've come together because they are experiencing firsthand the impacts of climate change. Their communities are more polluted and, as a result, have a deep passionate interest in working on this issue. So through Front and Centered, we've come together to be able to have a seat at the table together with environmentalists and labor and others. We've built the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy together and now are digging in to what we think is a equitable and effective and viable policy moving to the ballot in November.
Would you now give an overview of your initiative to fight climate change? What are you proposing?
In a nutshell, we are proposing to put a price on the pollution that causes climate change and invest the revenues from that fee in solving the problem. And solving the problem means a couple of things. It means investing in clean energy solutions, everything from solar panels on roofs to making homes more energy efficient, to providing people with cleaner options to get around, so cleaner cars, transit, affordable housing near transit so that people can get out of their cars. All of those solutions that are going to help us move off of dirty fossil fuels into clean energy. Another component of what we will invest in is dealing with the impacts of climate change that are already hitting our state so hard in terms of fires and rising sea levels. So when you think about where the fee money would be spent in terms of solving the problem, investing in clean energy, investing in making us more resilient to the impacts of climate change. But, you know, I think at the fundamental level, what this is doing is charge for the pollution and invest in the solutions, carbon reduction and dealing with climate impacts. And then overlaying that all and really at the center of it is a commitment to equity. These investments will be made in a way that take care of and lift up disproportionately impacted communities, the folks who've really borne the brunt of climate change the hardest and generally done the least to contribute to it. And the final piece is we want to make sure that we take care of working folks in this transition. I think we've all seen, particularly in the Northwest, that there can be a lot of lasting damage done if we don't think about, as we're transitioning to more sustainable ways of running our economy? How can we take care of the folks who've been there for us, who've powered our cars, who've provided the wood for our homes? You know, I think we've learned that making a just transition for workers is an important part of a lasting kind of durable solution.
Would you say a bit more about how the policy will reduce carbon emissions?
Well, Diane, I think it's important to note that one of the things that we want people to understand is that our reliance on fossil fuels has created a mess, creates a mess in every sense of the word. And for us as people of color, that mess is where everything tends to go. When you look at our city, when you look at our state, and you figure out where the pollution lives, where the mess is from our reliance on fossil fuels, they will be in communities of color. They'll be in communities with lower incomes. And so the impact that we're seeing is, and the question I think we're struggling with is, how do we both clean up the mess that we are creating and be able to stop creating more? And that's really the essence of what we're trying to do in this policy, is that we believe that we have a responsibility to address that. And the way in which we want to do that really is by having polluters pay, to have large corporations who are polluting to be able to pay for their pollution, much like I pay for the waste that comes out of my home through sewage or waste management that I pay for. Similarly, the idea is that we'll be able to generate the revenue that we need to be able to clean up things, to be able to stop our reliance on fossil fuels, and really to be able to make that available to everyone, to make it affordable, to make it accessible.
How about the effect on an individual's household budget as a result of the tax?
You know, there is probably some potential impact to folks in terms of rising costs of dirty energy. And that's, in a way, I think what we all want to do, which is to basically advantage clean energy and disadvantage dirty energy. And the fundamental way that we do that is charge more for the dirty stuff and take that money and invest it in the clean stuff. And I think for consumers, all of us really would prefer to have clean choices. I would like my home to be powered not by coal-fired electricity or natural gas heat, but wind and solar. That would be great. That would make me feel good about my daughter's future. And so the fundamental mechanism of this is the dirty stuff is disadvantaged and the clean stuff is invested in, because there's a lot to build. There's a lot that we need to build. I mean, the process of building clean energy, of wind, of solar, of transit, will provide a lot of jobs. And at the end of the day, consumers will be able to make the choices we want to make.
And, you know, I'll add from our perspective, because through Front and Center, we work with a lot of communities that have lower incomes. And I think that, as I said, it's all of our responsibility to clean up this mess. And that it is paramount in the work that we do and a commitment that we made as the Alliance members to not make poor people poorer, and to be able to make sure that this policy is equitable. So we are deeply committed to ensuring that the approach that we take not only ensures that there is not an undue burden on folks who are already having a hard time economically, but at the same time ensuring that there are direct investments in communities that are more polluted, to make sure that people with lower incomes or working low-wage jobs are able to access these solutions. So it's not just, you know, people who have means who can have solar panels on their house, who can drive cleaner cars, but how can we make a policy by which people who can't afford them now could afford them? And again, trying to make sure that we're including people in the solutions, at the same time being very focused about where we are cleaning up so that we have cleaner communities that are shared across economic level, and that the opportunity to have clean alternatives are more broadly shared.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Becky Kelly, president of the Washington Environmental Council, and Eiko Schaefer, director of Front and Centered. Our topic is the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy Initiative for Effective and Just Climate Action, which they plan to file with the state at the end of January and present to voters in the November 2018 general election. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. How much money will the carbon tax generate?
You know, we are still setting the exact tax rate, but somewhere in the neighborhood of a bit over $1 billion, $1.2 billion a year. So a sizable source of revenue for building the clean energy future, which is exciting.
What fraction of the money will be spent to address equity, roughly?
We don't have an exact dollar amount, but we do have a commitment in terms of a proportion to ensure that there's a percentage that is invested in communities that are more polluted, areas that we call highly impacted. There are areas of the state of Washington where you have a combination or a nexus between high rates of pollution and characteristics of vulnerability to environmental pollution. So how can we ensure that those resources are invested in those areas to clean those places up, but also to ensure that we're investing in solutions and that those communities have the infrastructure to be part of the clean energy transition. So in our policy, there are provisions that prioritize investments in those communities. There are also provisions to make sure that we are addressing the regressivity of any policy that we put forward.
And it's worth noting, I think, that sometimes people may hear that and think, oh, that means a whole bunch of money is going into South Seattle, and that's all. In fact, highly impacted communities are certainly in South Seattle and near the port, but they are also in rural parts of Washington. There are communities that are struggling with climate change and with some of these challenges all around the state. Mm-hmm. And these investments will be made all around the state, both in urban and rural areas.
Exactly. Fortunately or unfortunately, yeah. There is pollution that is concentrated in areas all across our state and concentrations of people who are impacted by health challenges as it comes to exposure to pollution, as well as economic characteristics that make them more vulnerable to pollution.
What role have Native American tribes played in the Alliance, and what input have the tribes had in developing your proposals?
Well, let me first say that tribal nations are a very important part of our state and our communities. As sovereign governments in the state of Washington, they are historic and legal leaders in the protection of our natural resources. We're very excited to be able to be in active conversation with tribal nations about how we can come together to put forward a winning ballot measure. And they are playing a critical role, much like they have been throughout a long history of being stewards of our natural resources.
There are a variety of efforts to address climate change in the 2018 Washington State legislative session, including a proposal recently put forward by Governor Inslee. If climate legislation passes in the legislature, what are your plans for the initiative?
You know, that's a great question. It's exciting that Governor Inslee, who is a tremendous champion on making progress on climate change, he's coming back at it again. We're appreciative of his tireless efforts in that regard. I would say if a strong policy passes that achieves the kinds of core values and goals that Aiko and I have been talking about, that would be terrific. We could move on to the many other things that we need to do to make this clean energy transition. And so we'll have to see. It's a short session. I think by many measures, it's an uphill battle, but one that we are certainly engaged in. We'll know soon. By early March, the session will be over. So if we get a good job done in the session, the legislature does their job to pass an equitable and effective policy, we can move on to other issues. But it's really important for us. They've taken a run at it many times and not gotten there. So it's very important for us, and the reason in part that we are moving ahead right now, that we prepare in case they don't get the job done. So we will be ready. We are not waiting. That's the message. And we are gearing up to make an effective push to the November 2018 ballot unless they get the job done.
To what extent do you see your filing an initiative this month influencing climate action efforts in the legislature?
I think it certainly puts more pressure on. It's been referenced by legislators and in media reports that part of what inspires folks to get into the conversation, Olympia, is the knowledge that it's likely to happen one way or another this year in Washington State. And so I think we see that as a positive influence. The breadth of our coalition and the power of 2018 and people, I think particularly in the face of a hostile federal administration that is pulling this country back on climate progress, people are rising up and saying, we got to make progress this year. So I think many people are thinking, ooh, this is going to happen in the legislature or at the ballot. And I think that's positive. It's driving momentum and it's getting people to come to the table, roll up their sleeves and get serious about their needs and interests.
What is your process and timeline for moving your ballot initiative forward?
The timeline is we're working pretty actively right now to talk to all the different communities about the policy that we can all get behind. Becky and I have been very busy having many, many meetings with lots of different individuals. So it's not just the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy, which is about 200 different organizations and NGOs, but also talking to many other folks who are interested in this issue. And the hope is to be able to file initiative by the end of this month, the end of January, and begin the process, which will include the signature gathering drive and being able to turn those in this summer and then looking towards November 2018 for a win.
Would you like to talk about your climate justice stewards and how their work is helping move your climate efforts forward?
I'd love to. You know, what Becky was saying about the initiative is that in our democracy, we have this extraordinary ability through the initiative process to be able to legislate as voters, as people. And that's a really powerful way in which we can take action. And as Becky said, you know, the legislature has had a run at this issue many, many times now. And we've come to the point where, you know, maybe it's time for the voters to be able to get the job done. We have assembled an extraordinary coalition. I have to say, Diane, in the 20 years I've lived in and worked in Washington State, I have never seen a coalition like this come together. The kinds of people that sit around the table have never sat around a table together. And it's historic, and it's because we recognize that this is something we have to address. We have to get out ahead of what we're seeing. Every day in the news, we're seeing storms and fires and things that are devastating to people, to businesses, to communities. People are ready for the change. And so what we have through this coalition is an extraordinary resource of people who want to volunteer. Our hope is to really build, and we're working towards building an extraordinary volunteer base that is going to make this happen. So our climate justice stewards are people who are saying, I want to take on leadership. I want to do more. I want to talk to my neighbors. I want to help build an infrastructure of volunteers that's going to make this happen. And it really, for us, puts the power of our democracy in our hands by going to the ballot. And people see that, and they're ready for that. So the climate justice stewards is an opportunity for anyone out there who really just, you're ready to go. We have a place for you. We have some things that you can take on and really organize your neighborhood, your place of worship, whatever way in which you want to connect with others to be able to make sure that we're cleaning up this mess to alleviate or reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, to be able to put forward a cleaner and brighter future for our state.
In 2016, an initiative to enact a revenue-neutral carbon tax in Washington state lost in the 2016 general election. What are the reasons you think the initiative you're putting forward this year has a better chance for success?
I'd say the biggest factor is the very broad table that ICO just referenced that has come together to work on this together. And that makes all the difference. And that broad table has come together, as I mentioned, out of a sense of shared interest and necessity and shared values. And we built this thing together. And when people build things together, the bonds they create are really strong and the belief in it is really strong. So as ICO said, it goes all the way from the leadership of organizations and businesses and labor unions down to the grassroots and the rank and file folks. People are ready to pick up petitions and get out there. And I think what makes a difference this year is the sense of urgency and the breadth of the coalition. That's how you win. You can't win with a little small kind of segment of interests. You have to have a broad swath of society who's committed to leaning in and getting this done together. And that will make a difference. And I think, you know, fires and floods and mudslides and storms are top of mind, and people are starting to feel scared for their kids and for their communities. And we've all got a lot on our minds, a lot to balance in our daily lives, but I think people are starting to feel like, yeah, maybe I need to spend a Saturday morning working on this one. This is a big one for our children, really, at this point. I think it's becoming, as parents, I think it's becoming very kind of emotionally held for us that we got to do something. We can't wait any longer, and Donald Trump isn't going to lead us there.
I would also add two other things. One is that we recognize that we all have a responsibility to do something about this, that to be able to invest in solutions is really where we need to go. We need to go there now. The other thing we know is the emerging electorate. When you look at young people, millennials, women, people of color, these are people and voters who care deeply about this issue. And they are electorates that are growing, and they're also very engaged right now. 2018, we hope, we believe, is going to be a historic year for us to really push back on the national dynamic, for us as Washington State to be a leader nationally. I feel very confident that our policy is one of the more progressive climate policies in the country. We have built an extraordinary coalition unlike anything you can see anywhere else in the country. And I think much like many other progressive issues, whether that's the $15 wage, paid family leave, marriage equality, there are things that we have led as Washington State, and we believe firmly that on climate change, we're going to do the same thing.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Becky Kelly, President of the Washington Environmental Council, and Iko Schaefer, Director of Front and Centered. Our topic is the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy Initiative for Effective and Just Climate Action, which they plan to file with the state at the end of January and present to voters in the November 2018 general election. Who or what groups are likely to work against your initiative? What kind of opposition do you expect?
We expect opposition from the fossil fuel industry, from oil companies and coal and fracked gas companies, people who have a vested interest in keeping the status quo and who don't want to pay for their pollution and who are not particularly interested in the well-being of Washington communities and getting out in front of climate change. And I think, you know, we've all seen the kind of information about how the oil industry has known about climate change and swept it under the rug for a long time. And we've seen how even companies like VW swindled people and put out more polluting cars. I think voters are really smart about seeing through that kind of behavior and knowing that the folks who will oppose this policy don't have the best interests of Washingtonians at heart. And I think in many ways that may incite people to get more involved.
And across the Pacific Northwest and all across the country, people have been standing against pipelines, against all sorts of efforts in their communities that, again, will make their communities more at risk of pollution, things that they see and understand to be bad for themselves, their health, their community, their children's future. So as you look at these efforts all across the country, as Becky said, the opposition will be those who have a vested interest in that infrastructure, have a vested interest in our ongoing reliance on fossil fuels. So we know that that will happen here in Washington State, but I also believe when you look across the country, there are lots of wins. There's lots of great efforts and organizing happening. And so we know by us coming together, by us putting forward a vision, by us working harder, that we are able to be successful.
What kind of a response have you gotten to your climate initiative so far?
As Iko said, the public is with us. People are worried about pollution, and they are very interested in ensuring that the folks who generate pollution pay a fee for it and that that fee goes to solving the problem. That is common sense. It is well aligned with voters' values. And people understand that we've made this mess. We all have a role in cleaning it up. Polluters pay. We invest in the solutions, and all of us end up with a better, safer future for Washington.
And the people that are most with us are young people, they're women, they're people of color, they're unionized households. So when you look at who's likely to support this and you look at our coalition, what we've built and the organizations that are around the table, that are women organizations, community of color organizations, labor, that we have the coalition that could engage and will be engaging those who care the most about this issue. And so that's really going to be important, that we are able to really leverage and engage that coalition to the win. But as Becky said, the public's with us. They get this.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Hope. These are big challenges, and we're up for them. And I think more than anything, we offer a chance. You know, sometimes maybe you sit at your kitchen table and you feel worried about these things and they seem too big. How do you get your arm around them? Is your fluorescent light bulb enough? And I think the exciting thing is in 2018, there's going to be a way, whether you have an hour or 10 or 20. Maybe you want to do something with people in your neighborhood, or you want to get your kids' school involved. There's a way to be part of solutions. And those solutions are going to be good for our economy. They're going to be good for workers. They're going to be good for disproportionately impacted communities. You can feel good about it, and you can do something. And as Iko said, you can be part of our democracy. And I think in 2018, we're all going to have to step it up, and this will be one of the exciting opportunities to do that.
I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, many of us came out of 2017 as a very challenging year for a lot of things. I think politically, we saw many environmental policies dismantled, programs that went away, federal investments that are no longer there. We saw new leadership that caused, I think, deep trouble in my mind about the prospects of our ability to really address climate change. At the same time, it was difficult not to see a story in the newspaper of something on fire or something that was flooding. I think for us, our hearts are still thinking about Puerto Rico, who still have yet to see any significant response from the storm that devastated them and the people that live there. So I think that 2018 is really our rallying call to be able to push back on that, to be able to reclaim the idea that, you know, time is of the essence. We have to be able to do something. Climate change and pollution is happening. We're seeing stories all the time. We know somebody that's likely impacted. Maybe we're impacted ourselves and we see it day to day. It's not a faraway conversation. It's right here with us, and it's in our living rooms through the television. It's through our phone calls with family. It's in the newspaper. It's in our backyards for many communities. And so I think the message is that it's time for us to take things in our own hands. And our leaders have fallen short for us. Federally, our leadership is beyond falling down for us. And so it's an opportunity for us as Washington State. It's an opportunity for us as voters to be able to say, we need to do this, and it's time for us to do this. And we all have a responsibility to clean up this mess, but we also have this extraordinary opportunity through that to invest in solutions, to be able to protect communities in the process, and to really, I think, assert our democracy and our place in it, to be able to forward solutions that we think work for us. And I'm inspired by the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy, this extraordinary coalition, people that are coming together, the tribal nations that are coming together with us, with businesses that are considering this proposal, and many others that are recognizing that we need to do something now, and that going to the ballot is not only our only choice, in my opinion, but a pathway and a choice through which we can win.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
You were just listening to Becky Kelly, president of the Washington Environmental Council, and Iko Schaefer, director of Front and Centered. For more information, check on the web at jobscleanenergywa.com. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to the podcast section of KEXP's website at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.